Dungeons and Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Hollow Street Media. By the will of the immortal emperor of mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Vox cast are solely those of the individual providing them, and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Attention on the battle fleet. This is Captain Ramaskos of the Imperial Star Cruiser Vox Arcona. Please listen carefully to the following announcement.
In accordance with the Codex Astartes, we hope that you have a productive trip to Arcona and arrive with the will to deliver the Emperor's judgment. Thank you.
Greetings, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 10, reporting on Sunday, July 5th, 2015, coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Katsu, and I am pleased to share the Fleet's Vox Relay with Gigabyte today. How you doing, man?
I'm tired.
That was almost an American accent.
Very, very tired.
Yep. Well, you know, I want to thank you, since it is July the 5th. I want to thank you for not for your nation not coming to take away our country again. We did receive a very tersely worded letter from the Queen due to our inability to govern her. Have you ever seen that meme? Have you ever seen that picture?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, because you're clearly not able to govern yourselves, we have decided to reassert control of the monarchy in America. Please learn to say aluminium herbs because there's an I in it. I guess we need to cover that Eternal Crusade thing or something. Right?
Yes, indeed.
Alright, so first things first, housekeeping, as always. Vox Arcona's Great Crusade Sound Off. We have a winner, and the winner of the contest, this is awesome. I hope our other contests don't go this way, but at the same time, like, it's good for him. But the winner of the Great Crusade Sound Off is Valrak. It's a moderator on the forums and whatnot. I'm pretty sure that he's got plans for this warrior pack. We'll be getting it over to him as soon as we can get back in touch with him. But we wanted to make the announcement. For whatever reason, his audio file is not loading into my audio program, so I'm going to clean it up and it'll start being shown or broadcast on next week's episode. So, congratulations to Valrak. And just to let you guys know, like, literally he sent it in at the last minute before we decided that we were going to hold it off for another contest or whatever. He sent us an audio clip. It's a pretty cool audio clip. He did some post-processing and stuff to it. So we look forward to putting that on the show and letting y'all listen to it. So no stories, no short stories have been released. I'm not 100% sure that I can listen to another Space Marine short story by a non-Dark Angel where they insist on that they're in charge of the campaign and not the Dark Angels. But what? Like, we'll cover this in a second, because a awesome video got released, specifically called Vanguards Number One. Vanguards Number One.
Number One, yes.
Yeah, which means, of course, we'll be seeing more Vanguards videos as we go on. The significance of Vanguards, for those of you who are not founders, is that upon buying your founder pack, you get the forum title Arcona Vanguard, which means you're going in, you're going in with the first wave. Means there's more bugs for you to kill. You go in, you smash everything in more than two legs, you get me. We get you, sir. Yeah. In case you haven't gathered, I love Starship Troopers. All of them, actually. Even the ones that nobody likes. But we got to see the game. We got to see the things going on and missions. And the thing is this, like, if you've never seen an End of the Warp, like, I can see how you're super pumped by this.
Definitely.
Yeah, but the reason that I was particularly pumped by Vanguard's number one was, first off, it's yet more,
get me in the game, I want to play the game.
But, like, as silly as this sounds, like, I love Katie, I love Brent, I love Nathan. Well, I mean, not like love, except for maybe Nathan, you know. But
there's a love hate that.
There's a thing there, but it gave us a chance to see gameplay without people talking over it, which is going to be how I'm going to experience it, you know. At least until I turn on my TeamSpeak and all my friends are jabbering off into my ear. But anyway, I'm jazzed. I'm always jazzed. I want the Buffalo to be headed south, like, right now. Like, I want an email to be sitting in the Vox Arcona email box or in my personal box saying, hey, go sign in. And then I'd be like, okay, but I'm never going to tell a soul. Anyway.
Yeah, and I saw that at work, and I was watching that. I was thinking to myself, oh my god, so much chomping at the bit right now.
Right? So, Into the Warp 25. There have been 25 Into the Warps. That's crazy. So, that was Katie, Brent, Michael, and Noah. There was another member of the staff that was there, but he, like, introduced himself and then took off. And I say Noah.
Yeah.
I say Noah because Noah is a new face in the crowd, and we're going to cover what the hell he's doing there. But, of course, Katie and Brent, we know. Michael Chan, everybody's waiting for him to come back. So, like, we have everybody. So, the production update, it is official. Founder access is this summer. Now,
yay!
We've been sitting here and, like, you know, everything adds up. All the math is there. But now it's official that Founder Access is this summer. Now someone asked, what constitutes summer? Brent said that summer ends in August, and Katie was very quick to point out that summer... Excuse me, I'm yawning all over the place. Katie was very quick to point out that summer ends September 21st. But that's the official last day of summer, not what everybody goes, okay, that's summer.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of depends on where you are, doesn't it?
Right. Well, first off, it depends on where you are and everything else like this, but, like, the official end of summer is September 21st.
Mm-hmm.
In either case, no exact date has been given, but they did use the following three phrases, and these are direct quotes, and I'm going to leave them where they are so for you to draw your own conclusions. I know what conclusions I'm drawing, but... they said, quote, soon, quote, shortly, and Katie said, quote, it's time to get your computers and rigs ready. So, if you are not running a computer that has the minimum system requirements, my suggestion is now is the time to get it up to speed.
Definitely.
And because you figure important announcements in the next now 1 to 3 weeks, or bigger announcements, significant announcements in the next 1 to 3 weeks, and shipping on computer parts can take a week or two.
Well, and let's face it, with the state of Windows right now, it might take you that long to work out any bugs.
Well, because see, that's the other thing, is that at the end of this month, Windows 10 deploys, and that could be a whole other thing, so you want to make sure you get your system up and stable before...
Yeah, I'm really starting to rethink my thoughts of installing Windows 10, especially with this Founders thing coming out. I don't want to install it and then find out that EC kind of bugs out.
Well, they said that this, they've been building on computers that are going to be making the upgrade to Windows 10. So my guess is the only thing that I am necessarily concerned about is because I'm probably going to owe you money because obviously they're probably not going to want to upgrade Windows 10, or they're probably not going to want to release something that is Windows 10 capable without having run it on Windows 10. They don't have, and from my gather, they don't have advanced copies, and Windows 10 releases the 29th. So
that's true.
Which will put me about a couple of days past my predicted date. So I'm hoping I'm wrong, but that's just because, Anyway, so they also announced, in addition to Founder Access being this summer, they have officially announced that they're using Unreal Engine 4. There's a handful of games that are using Unreal 4, but because Unreal is an amazing shooter engine.
Just a bit.
Well, from what I remember, because it's a shooter engine, this has allowed the team to make some amazingly fast progress, which is why they've been able to push the date up. Mm-hmm. Because, it's a stronger engine than Unreal 3, but it's not all that different than Unreal 3. So if you're familiar with Unreal 3, Unreal 4 isn't that big of a jump from what I'm gathering.
At the base level, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not a programmer, so I don't know all of the magical, mystery tours behind the veil, but still, not beyond the veil, behind the veil.
Plug.
Plug. TM. Anyway, so also the team's expanding. The first wave of initial ramp-up hiring includes 11 new staffers, and Noah is one of them. Noah's on the development team. He's in charge of economy. And Noah has 8 years of experience with EVE Online, which is where he and Nathan kind of met. And, makes sense that he kind of got brought in. What I do
I'm not surprised they made him part of the economy team, because, EVE is ridiculous
EVE
for his
economy. Don't get me started about EVE and its economy and all of that. Economy Simulator Online. That's EVE. what I really like about this is that, okay, so first off, let's break this down into the three components that make me jump for joy. One, the words first wave. Let me back up. First, the word expanding. Because if you know even a little bit about the development cycle, you're worried about getting the core gameplay down. You're worried about getting the core system in place. You don't need a crap ton of QA people and 70 animators and 78 graphic designers. You need the frame to get the game on the ground and to get things moving.
Precisely.
Once you get closer to putting it in the hands of people, then you start ramping up. You start adding more programmers. You start adding more designers. You start adding more level people. You start adding more customer service, technical support, etc., etc. Right now, they're not at the point where they're going to hire a bunch of customer service people, but they are getting into the technical stuff of, okay, we need to be able to actually shoot predators. We need to do these things with the rhinos. We need to do these other things with this, and we need to do technical stuff. We need to get the assault marine working right and everything else. So, like I said, first off, expanding. They're finally at the point where they can bring on more team to help speed things up. The second thing I like is quote unquote first wave, which means this isn't all they're doing. This is just the beginning of the expanding. Initial ramp up that jumps up too, because ramp up obviously means we're getting started. And the last thing I like about this phrase is 11 new staffers. So they've added a dozen people to the team just here, which also means that hopefully whenever Fridays come around and Into the Warp happens, now instead of 10 people doing a 5v5, now we've got an extra dozen people. So now we've got, potential for 10v10.
10v10, yeah.
Yeah. Because I seem to remember that we were doing 10v10s back in the day. And then I guess there was a reduction and some people moved on to other projects. And now we can bring more people in. Yes. So huge, huge congratulations to Behavior. We're working on this. and we're going to, you know, keep looking forward to more of these ramp up hirings and see where we go from there. The loyalist subfaction vote ends in 2 weeks, and there is a 4% between the top two. I am willing to put money, or not money, but I'm willing to put something significant on the fact that this is the Iron Fists and the Raven Guard, because really, who are the Iron Hands?
The Imperial Fists, man.
What? Yeah.
You said the Iron Fists.
No, not the Iron Fists. Iron Fist is Coheed and Cambria. Imperial Fists. I bet it's the Imperial Fist and the Raven Guard. Like I said, 4% between the top two. It's going to be a pretty hotly contested fight there. But in the end, your black armor is going home. It's going to be yellow. Because that's how it's got to be.
I would definitely put Bison Bucks on it.
Really? You want to put Bison Bucks on it?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, who are you putting down for? Who are you putting down for? Are you putting down for Raven Guard?
No, I think the Imperial Fists are going to be the all-time favorite.
Well, that doesn't help me, because I was going to say the Imperial Fists, too. Like, yeah, we win.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Raven Guard, as great as they are, and as woefully underrepresented as they are, I don't think they have as big a following as the Imperial Fists.
Right. Well, that's what I pointed out the other day. It's like the people who are on the forums that are big, Imperial Fist fans, they got smart and they're calling in their successor chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So Imperial Fists are calling in Crimson Fists and Black Templars and all the peoples. Butchers, Bakers,
see, that's the other thing. I mean, I don't know that many people. Well, I don't know that many people that can name a Raven Guard successor.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't even know. Did the Raven Guard even make it to the internet?
To Lexicanium.
I have to know. Yes, to Lexicanium.
Yeah, no, they do have successor chapters.
Give me a second.
Black Guard, the Carcharodons.
Oh wow! Holy crap!
Dark Eagles, Death Eagles, Death Spectres, Flame Eagles, Hawk Lords, Imperial Talons, Knights of the Raven, Raptors, Revelers, Stormhawks, and Stormwings. Pretty much anything with a bird motif.
Well, but here's the deal. Of those, I know of the Carcharodons, which I think are the Space Sharks or something.
Yeah, they're the Space Sharks.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of an old 90s cartoon show.
Like, I know them. I know the... Do I know the Flame Eagles? I don't remember. But I know the Revilers.
Uh-huh.
Because they're the...
Revilers, sorry, not Revelers.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, you know.
I know the Death Spectres.
Really? You know the... I don't remember them, but...
Yeah, they have the weird, like, bone helmets.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the only reason I thought I knew the Flame Eagles was because the, No, it's the Firehawks that turn into the Legion of the Damned, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
So yeah, the Death Spectres are the 13th Founding.
Founding?
One of the Cursed Foundings. Yeah. Dark Founding.
Okay, so let's see what else got put in. Assault Marines! Oh my god. The Assault Marines look amazing. The wall grab triangle jumps look awesome. The ground slams look amazing. The only thing is, with the current build that was put in place, the cover system got bugged. So they couldn't really show what an Assault Marine did in cover. Even though there were a couple of times where I saw an Assault Marine go into cover, it didn't really look good. But that's because you have a giant backpack on. You're going to draw attention to yourself. You're not going to, like, hide.
Well, it bugged out the sword as well, didn't it? The chainsword.
For some reason, or whatever.
Yeah, they flipped it back. To be honest, though, I like that. I thought that was really good. It kind of flipped over in his hand and kind of had a backhanded backhanded thingy to it. I can't think of the word.
Yep. So no, I there were some good things. There were some not good things with the Assault Marine, but by and large, good things. Tons and tons and tons of good things. They added target spotting and mini-map radar detection. So if you're sitting there as a Chaos Marine, and I'm sitting here as a Loyalist, and you discharge your weapon, I'm going to see you on the mini-map. Also, by aiming at you and hitting Q, I tag you, which is nothing new to the shooter genre.
Mm-hmm.
It works out. Let's see. They re-added in damage effects and state changes. So if you're getting shot from behind, you're going to see effects behind you. If you get hit worse hard enough, you're going to start bleeding out. Those kind of things. Then there's my favorite thing I got to see.
Oh yes.
Brent led off with, you're not supposed to shoot people with a las cannon. But if you do, and then he shot somebody with the las cannon and they vaporized.
You're not supposed to do this, but I'm gonna do this right now.
I think I'm just gonna start shooting people with las cannons just to watch them burn.
Exactly.
No, I won't. I will use the stalker bolter like a good marine because the codex says so. Anyway, Brent said that they're working on the sorcerer and they're going to get rid of the sorcerer pink effects. But Katie wants them in. But Katie wants them in, and we've said this before. We really like the idea of the sorcerer having kind of a pink effect, because pink and that pink and that cerulean blue, they are the colors of chaos. And so it doesn't make good sense to not have that pinky purple, magic color be put in. I understand that particular effect isn't cool, but still, that color is awesome. And we started seeing more animations for executions, but they haven't re-added in the effects and audio. So, but what we did see is that we're no longer stabbing people with the top of the bolt gun, and I see that as a win.
Totally.
Right. So did you want to cover some of the Q&A?
Sure.
Yeah.
So someone asked, will there be different horns for the Chaos Space Marine helmets? Obviously, yes. I think that's a given for Chaos Space Marines, given that that's like one of the defining features of a Chaos Space Marine.
They had said that these Marines that you're seeing are naked. They don't have all of the bells and whistles and all of the spiffy things. These are just generic default Marines and Chaos Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the horns will probably come in by cosmetic modifications. So.
Yeah, of course. Another question about vehicles. Will they be in soon? Riders and Predators apparently are drivable and will be back in a few weeks. So we'll be seeing those again at some point. Spamming the assault pack, Righteous Judgment thing. Will that be possible? Apparently they're working on balancing it. So I doubt very much you'll be able to keep doing that over and over again, because that's a bit OP.
Well, they were talking about putting in a minimum distance. Like,
yeah,
you have to jump so far before you can do the AoE slam. And it pops you into the air, things like that. Like, because the problem is, otherwise, an assault marine could literally just jump slam, jump slam, jump slam, jump slam, jump slam.
And exactly, then they're on doing a bloody trampoline.
Right, and then they're doing AoE slams. It's like a bunny hop from hell, you know? So then they also ask about visual effects, like what visual effects would there be? Michael Chan is the guy in charge of, I'll say loot, but he's the guy in charge of the different cosmetics and other stuff that's going to get added in the game. And he was like, weapons and signum to go on your helmet and maybe some badges. Of course, they asked him these things in the middle of a match. And if you've watched anything that Mike's been a part of with Eternal Crusade, like, he's one of the more serious FPS competitors, you know? And so you're sitting here asking him in the middle of the match, and I really just got the impression that he was like, oh my god, leave me alone, I'm trying to purge heretics, leave me alone, I'm trying to shoot people.
It's like, just stuff, go away.
Signums. I'm trying to shoot people, guys.
Just like signums and badges and stuff. Okay, just stuff.
yeah, there's going to be stuff. You can put it on your armor. It's going to be awesome. Leave me alone. Boom, 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 boom. we're not saying anything bad about that, because I love watching him play. But it was just,
plus, we're all like that anyway.
Like, I get that. I get that way.
Honey, you do the washing up.
What? Yeah, sure.
In a minute.
But I'm taming a dinosaur, leave me alone.
I'm trying to kill a golem.
Right. So the question came up about spectator mode, as it applies to MLG and eSport. They said that they want to put it in because they want to encourage eSport. But not if it allows for significant cheating. And we talked about this before, about somebody who runs into a room and dies and then turns themselves into an eye in the sky about, okay, in this room there's this guy and this guy and this guy and a partridge and a pear tree. You know what I'm saying? Like, we talked about it becoming a significant source of cheating or whatever.
The answer to this question kind of made me think. I mean, MLG and esports right now is quite massive, especially with, you know, MOBAs and you know, games like Smite, League of Legends, things like this. And it's just kind of made me think. I mean, is this an intention for this game? Are they intentionally moving it towards MLG and esport, that kind of arena?
Well, I don't think that that's what they want to do. Like, personally, honestly, I want them to do what they do with PlanetSide. PlanetSide has a spectator mode for media and the developers, and that's it.
Yeah.
As a media agent, you can fly over a battlefield and watch a fight happen. Or as the developers, you can do that. And they used to do, I haven't watched if they've done Twitches or live streams in any amount of time. But they used to do that. They used to fly over the maps and watch these big fights happening and stuff. So, I see it, I get it, but, like, I really don't think that that's a tool. I think that that needs to be in the media and customer/public relations hands, and I really don't think that needs to be in the hands of casual players.
Totally.
I think that if you want to see how a fight's happening, then you better get your boots on the ground and get running. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because otherwise it breaks immersion as well.
Yeah. Well, yes, and there are, as silly as it sounds, there are role-play justifications for a spectator mode.
Psychic powers and stuff. But yeah.
Well, psychic powers, the Imperial Tarot, ground augers, and basically all these super pseudo-tech...
Yeah.
But really, it's just like, I don't want somebody who's paid money to get into this game to be running spectator mode. I want them in, because if they're spying for the enemy team, I want the ability to shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's me.
That's totally.
And then their trivia question, which made me giggle. We didn't exactly cover it, but it was the answer. We probably could have done it even better. I had to watch it on the YouTube. I didn't watch it on the Twitch. They didn't say whether the correct answer was the Word Bearers or the Imperial Heralds, because they said, what was the first legion to have chaplains? And the actual answer is the Imperial Heralds.
Imperial Heralds, yeah.
Now, the Imperial Heralds become the Word Bearers, even as a pre-heresy legion, but that doesn't change the fact that at first they are known as the Imperial Heralds. And it's actually in Lacanium that the cool thing is, whenever the Imperial fleets would reach a planet, an Imperial Herald would go down in black armor with a skull helmet and the symbol of the Imperium, and
this Crozius
basically
saying,
And that's the chaplain armor. If you know anything about the chaplaincy, like, that's the chaplain armor. We didn't cover it. We didn't cover that part because obviously there's a lot of ground to cover when it comes to the Word Bearers, because the Word Bearers lead to the conversion and the fall of Horus. So, and he's sort of an important guy. He had an entire heresy named after him. So that was the end of the warp. We try and cover a bunch of different stuff here. You know, y'all know this. We don't really have 40K video game and miniature news, but We do have one little piece of fantasy news, and that's about a... Is that a board game? The game's called Age of Sigmar, and I really haven't paid that much attention to it. But
it looks like an evolution of... It basically looks like the Warhammer Fantasy Battles is evolving. We had End Times, and now we have Age of Sigmar.
Wait, are you telling me that Games Workshop is advancing a timeline on its product line?
Possibly.
Wait a second. To the Games Workshop page.
It's a bit hard to say, because like I say, we had Warhammer End Times, which was the release of Nagash and his Mortarks, Neferata, Arkhan the Black, and Manfred von Karstein, which kind of evolved the Vampire Counts army a lot. And I think...
Well, I can tell you officially now that the website... I'm on the US GW site. And there's the Warhammer 40K logo, the Hobbit logo, and then the Warhammer logo has been replaced by the Warhammer Age of Sigmar logo.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Logo, and it says the Age of Sigmar begins here. You know, I may end up looking... Ooh, the rules. I think I'll grab the rules. But I'm not going to read them right now. Point is, the problem is this. I'm looking at these pictures because apparently there's, like, Grand Alliances and all this other stuff. And right now they have the Stormcast Eternals and the Khorne Bloodbound. I'm not seeing the Empire. These guys should be Empire, and I am not seeing Empire. What I am seeing is I'm seeing the Custodes, or I am seeing, ready for this, the Thunder Warriors.
Yeah.
I am seeing these guys look like the Thunder Warriors, even though no such thing, you know, Sigmar isn't, what is it? Sigmar isn't Khorne, or isn't the Emperor. Except for the fact that these guys look like... Continue looking at the Stormcast of Eternal with wings and dual hammers. And
well, you know, Sigmar isn't one of the Primarchs either, apparently.
Well, the problem that I'm running into is that, like, that looks like... I'm seeing these Eternals that have wings, and, like, God, if that doesn't look like a Blood Angel Marines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got the whole, like, segmented armor look to it.
Yeah, the other thing?
It doesn't look Empire, because Empire is that German-Russian thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to know the other thing?
Go ahead.
The Stormcast Eternals, like, army symbol is a hammer in a circle, like a sun circle, and the hammer's got two lightning bolts coming off of it.
Yeah, no. That's, well, those are consistent with the Empire, though, right?
Well, the hammer is. The lightning bolt isn't.
Well, the lightning bolt could easily be the Twin Tail Comet, which is the sign of Sigmar.
Not facing downwards. The Twin Tail Comet was always a sideways facing.
Sideways.
Yeah, it's always a sideways facing symbol.
Well, maybe now it's facing up and it's about ready to bugger off. I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. Age of Sigmar 7. The thing is this, though. I'm looking at some of these. I'm seeing cultists, and I'm seeing... Like, I'm looking at the Chaos...
Well, they'd be barbarians, wouldn't they?
No, don't get me started. Well, first off, the Chaos Warlord dude with, like, a... I guess that's some kind of cornhound or warp beast. Like, that dude looks hoss, but that looks like Space Marine armor.
Yeah.
Really looks like Space Marine armor. And then the big...
I don't like the hound, though. It looks like he's got a weird beard.
Well, it's a warp beast, is what it is. But the thing is this.
I know, it looks
then
weird.
There's the then there's the giant monster thing. It looks like a hell brute.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me look at the guys. Yeah, these, like, warrior champion dudes. Those are totally Khorne Berserkers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... I don't know. One Lord Celestin, one Lord Relictor, three Retributors... two units of five Liberators, two units of 10 Blood Reavers, which are cultists, five Blood Warriors, which look like Berserkers, one Mighty Lord of Khorne, one Blood Secretor?
Blood Stoker, and one Korgorath.
I don't know. And for $125, I mean, I get their round bases, but, like, I don't know. There's something about this that, like, I'm going to read the rules, and maybe I'll be won over. But I don't really know that I want to... Like, I don't know that this is going to be enough to win me back to fantasy.
No. You know? I think I'm on the same page as Angry Joe here on this one. I really don't know if we're being trolled or not.
Now, I do like the fact that if you go to the website, there's the rules, and then underneath the rules, there are PDFs to the...
Apparently the dog doesn't like it either.
The dog does not like Warhammer Fantasy. The dog is very upset with Warhammer Fantasy. But there are war scrolls for each of the armies.
Mm-hmm.
Dwarfs, Empire, Lizardmen. That might be something. Like, I want to read these rules and then go look at Empire and see what changed.
Yeah.
That's not my army. My army's Bretonnia, but I've also not had a fantasy army in years. So this is more of a... This is more of an interest thing, just a what's going on kind of deal.
I'm definitely going to have to have a look at the Vampire Counts army.
Right. I don't know. We'll have to, I'll have to see what happens.
Gigabyte, no like. Bad medicine.
This is one of those things that it looks like... Here's the deal. This is my thing. It looks like Games Workshop is taking a risk. And if they're willing to take a risk, I am willing to at least look at what they're doing.
Well, at least it's you know, development.
Right, and it's also free.
Yeah.
Like the rule book.
Yeah, which is a weird thing for Games Workshop, let's put that.
Right. So that leads us to our data slate for this week, which I don't really have quotes other than let the galaxy burn.
Pretty much.
Because we're going to cover our best brand new friend. We're going to cover the oldest book trick in the book, the reason that darkness exists, and that is the Black Legion.
Previously known as
the Black Legion, aka the Luna Wolves, aka the Sons of Horus, aka the Luna Wolves, aka the Black Legion. The Black Legion's homeworld, pre-heresy, was the planet of Sthonia. It is now currently a dust nebula around the Eye of Terror. The Primarch's name is Horus Lupercal, who is sort of a little guy in the entire Warhammer 40K universe.
You know what I find really funny about Horus?
What do you find funny about Horus?
His home is the planet he landed on after being scattered from Earth has never been released by GW. Officially, the Lunar Wolves, the Black Legion, were drawn from Chthonia, but it was never stated as to whether Horus came from there after being taken from Earth. So that's really quite interesting for me. And also, his surname, Lupercal, is Latin for she-wolf, which I found really weird as well.
Horus is a space wolf. You've heard it here first. All right. Sorry, got distracted real quick. The chapter history of the Black Legion was originally known as the 16th Legion, and following the pacification of Luna, they were known as the Luna Wolves. They were the Legion of Horus himself. In honor of Horus's great achievements during the Great Crusade, the Emperor of Mankind decreed that the Legion could rename itself to the Sons of Horus. Originally, Horus didn't want to do that. But later he had a discussion with, I believe it was Sanguinius, and Sanguinius was like, no, if the Emperor put this on the table for you, dude, you need to take it.
It's like, dude, you should totally do that.
Right. Let us see here. So the Lunar Wolves come from Sithonia, which is allegedly existed in one of Terra's closest neighboring star systems, being within reach even for non-warp spacecraft. it had been colonized, built on, tunneled, and mined out since the dawn of space travel. All natural resources had been stripped away and used up millennia before, and the ancient mining technology had long been rediscovered and removed by the adepts of Mars. The planet was mostly abandoned, riddled with catacombs, crumbling industrial plants, exhausted mine workings, really just kind of a crap hole. Given time, it basically at this point, due to a current Imperial records, it believed to have lost geostructural integrity after the heresy, but realistically, every other traitor Primarch's homeworld was bombed into inexistence.
Bombed back to the Stone Age, yeah.
Well, beyond that, like, the most of them are dead or lifeless rocks.
Pretty much.
So, Sithonia was close to Terra when it, we said it's close to Terra, but it's so close to Terra that at least one native of that planet was able to travel to Terra during the Unification War, and then later on became one of the very first Luna Wolves. Let's see. Perhaps the greatest achievement for the Luna Wolves was the Ulanor Crusade. It became basically the high water mark, and it's where Horus was going after the Orc Overlord Urlok Urg, very creative name. He went in with 10 Terminators, and there was a big, huge fight that occurred. And by the time it was done, the only two to walk out of there were Horus and Ezekiel Abaddon, who you will know as Abaddon the Despoiler, Abaddon the guy who can't get a crusade right to save his life.
Abaddon
the bitch. So after Ulanor ended, the Emperor was like, "Holy crap, this is awesome. In fact, not only is this awesome, but we're going to give you the title of War Master," which made him supreme commander of the entire Imperial forces, and it gave him complete military control over the crusade. As Total Biscuit then so eloquently puts it in the Warhammer 40k lore in 5 minutes, the Emperor then goes back to Earth to go muck about with ancient technology. Horus doesn't really, and I'm going to start skipping ahead here, because we've covered a lot of this stuff. So Emperor goes off to go muck about with ancient technology on Earth, try to build a human copy of the Webway. He appoints the Council of Terra, which later becomes the High Lords. All of this sits in the craw of Horus. Like, Daddy doesn't love me. Daddy would rather hand control of the Imperium that we fought for and bled for to a bunch of simpering bureaucrats who aren't even incarnate gods. You know, like, what the hell? And eventually I'm even going to have to bow knee to these things? What the hell? It's a recurring theme in Space Marine stories that the Marines, after undergoing all the genetic implementation and all the hypno training and the indoctrination and all this other stuff, like, really, most Marines completely lose touch with their humanity. They don't really see themselves as human anymore, because they're really not. They're something well beyond human.
I would also say that a recurring theme in 40k in general, as well as most Space Marine stories, is the idea that power is handed to those who deserve it least, but want it the most.
Right. Well, the thing about Horus is that Horus sees all of this stuff happening, and he's the guy who's gone out and he's prosecuting the Great Crusade, and he's doing all of this stuff, and he feels that the Primarchs and the Legions should get their due. They kicked ass. They conquered these worlds. They should be able to, you know, reap the benefits and govern and all this other stuff. Well, that feeds into it. Afterwards, he decides to go fight on the moon of Davin, and is wounded by Eugen Temba, who happens to be a Nurgle cultist, and was planted there by Lorgar, Primarch of the Wardbearers, to get Horus injured to the point where he had to seek treatment from the Snake Lodge, or the Serpent Lodge, and there they feed his megalomania and his, you know, there are these powers that will give you as much power as you are willing to grab yourself. And Horus is like, what? And they're like, yeah, and you can get people to worship you, and you can get people to be absolutely enthralled by you, and you can become all powerful and all destructive, and you can be badass. And Horus bought into it.
Horus was like, totes, dude. Okay, thanks, bye.
There. Well, the thing is this. Like, he's a guy, and the Legion follows suit on this. Like, they persevere against all odds to be impossibly awesome and gods among men. And Horus is chief among them as his Primarch, as their Primarch. So he's like, you know, here he's looking at an Imperium that after the Crusade is won, they are going to have to bend knee to a bunch of humans who don't understand the cost that was levied to wage this war. And then on the other hand, there's this organization, this power, that is willing to give him as much power as he can take and hold. And in the eyes of Horus, he can take an awful lot of power. And he can hold an awful lot of power.
Oh, just a bit.
Well, and so he really, you know, he's like, hey, tell me more. Let me see your brochure. And they're like, hey, Powers of Chaos. And at that point, Horus gets the idea in his head that these things are well beyond the power of his father. And he can take what that he can. He's not bowing to them. He's not serving them. He can take what he wants from them. And the Powers of Chaos, who are in fact infinitely more powerful than Horus, decide to let him feed that delusion just to see where it goes.
At the beginning, it's for Horus, it's an alliance of convenience for the beginning for him, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And there's other things that you find out, like the Emperor gained access to the warp and gained access to all the other cool, a lot of the cool power he has by basically sneaking into the warp and stealing.
Whereas pretty much.
Horus took it at sword point, basically. And so in a number of ways, if people could have kept Horus sane, like, Horus was far superior to the Emperor in certain respects, but ultimately he wasn't, and he had crazy daddy issues, and he got wounded by Lorgar, who had been at this point disillusioned by the Emperor and decided that he was going to tear down the Empire, you know, the Imperium single-handedly. So in the meantime, Horus swears to Chaos out of convenience to help him reestablish the Imperium the way he wants. He works with Lorgar to set some things up. He wipes out any of his Legion that will not follow him in a raid on an attack on Isfahan 3, as opposed to the Isfahan 5 drop type massacre. But on Isfahan 3, he wipes out damn near everybody and reverts to a number of them broke off and they started calling themselves the Luna Wolves again, and Horus responded by putting them all down except for Iaktan Cruz, who was A, not present at Isfahan 3. That was number one. Number two, he was instrumental in the flight of the Eisenstein incident, and three, he is one of the very first Greymans recruited by Malkador the Sigil to create this new demon hunting army composed of people that absolutely hate Chaos for some reason. But outside of the Legion, at that point Horus had cleaned house internally. But Horus also reached out and began to corrupt every organization that he worked with, including part of the Adeptus Mechanus, the Collegia Titanica, and the Legio Cybernetica. The other Primarchs, some of them, he appealed to their pride, martial prowess, and courage. Some of them, he played on past grudges and favors. Ultimately, he ends up earning the loyalty of half of the Primarchs. And then at that point, the Isfahan 5 drop site massacre occurs. Everything goes ridiculous. And
all the shit hits all the fans.
All the shit hits all the fans. And in the process, he fights his way to Terra. We've covered a bunch of different battles in the Horus Heresy. We'll cover a couple more later. He makes his way to Terra. He fights. There's the fight with Sanguinius where he tears down Sanguinius. Then he fights the Emperor. We know how that ends up. The remnants of the Imperial boarding party... the remnants of the Imperial boarding party start going through everything, grab the Emperor, pull him out. Abaddon grabs the body of Horus, and Abaddon and the First Company get the hell out of Dodge. Because Horus's death broke the Sons of Horus's morale. They were the first traitor legion to retreat from Terra, and that, of course, pissed off all the other traitor legions, because how dare they? The legion regrouped on the world of Malium inside the Eye of Terra. There they appointed... they built a fortress tomb for the War Master's corpse, and even in death, still revered him as their commander. Nobody was appointed to be in charge of the Legion, and they kept praying to him for guidance. Meanwhile, the Sons of Horus kind of doubled down on their fanaticism towards Chaos. Not necessarily to the Chaos God, but to Chaos. Sort of as a way to atone for the fact that they ran, and to reprove themselves as the best legion. The Sons of Horus dedicated themselves not to a single chaos power, but constantly shifting loyalty. Basically, whatever god would give them the power to do what they needed to at that point. Which, of course, chaos gods are fine with. The once great legion that started the heresy at 170,000 constantly dwindled down in number until they neared extinction. And eventually, desperate experimentation and research by the Legion's sorcerer librarians uncovered a method of possession that didn't destroy the mortal host. Because what would happen is they'd cut these deals with demons, the demons would possess them, and whenever they went to go change alliances, the demons would leave and take the soul with them and kill the body. So the sorcerer librarians worked out a way how to sort that out and fix it. Meanwhile, the Emperor's Children, led by the primogenitor Fabius Bile, duck into Malium, take the body of Horus, and they begin to clone all two peoples. They begin to clone the War Master's corpse. At this point, Abaddon, who is captain of the First Company, flips shit. He takes the position of War Master and leader of his legion. The Sons reject Horus's name, paint their armor black. Abaddon calls this new legion the Black Legion. And in a lightning raid, they go in, they destroy the clones of the War Master, they destroy the corpse of the War Master, and they then... gathered everybody up on their remaining space vessels and moved further in to further their exile. And they have raided from the Eye of Terror into the Imperium ever since. Did you want to talk about the cult and what makes them special?
Certainly. So the warrior cult of the, what is essentially the Lunar Wolves, they were a very highly efficient military force that thrived on the personal charisma, ambition, and pride of their Primarch. They had this tremendous pride in the fact that they are the Sons of Horus. These traits carry on into both their organization and their motivation, with ambition, brotherhood, and pride all being notable features of their inner workings. Again, they're very, very prideful of the fact that they are who they are. excuse me. Their military maneuvers and workings are exceedingly efficient just because of the fact that they believe they are the best legion. Unlike something like the Emperor's Children, who seek perfection and believe that they're perfect in every way, shape, and form. The Sons of Horus, the Lunar Wolves, pre-heresy obviously, know that they are the best. They are Horus's chapter, and they are Horus's chapter for a reason. They are the best, best at what they do. What makes the Black Legion special? again, Horus's boys, now Abaddon's boys.
right.
They also have a particular way of waging war known as the spear tip. The overriding belief of the Legion prior to the death of Horus and their defeat at Terra was their complete superiority above all the other legions, and indeed any and all enemies. In continually seeking to prove themselves as the greatest legion, they did indeed achieve most in terms of sheer numbers of worlds brought into compliance prior to the outbreak of the heresy. The Legion, in its loyalist incarnation, was a flexible fighting force that performed well and adapted quickly to almost any combat situation. It was trained to respond sharply and decisively to the tactical orders of its warmaster, and consequently the chain of command within the Legion was very efficient. The principal tactic of the... Sorry, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just saying nice.
Yeah. No, very much so. They're very flexible and able to respond to quick changes on the battlefield very quickly.
So, the principal tactic of the Legion, as you had said, which illustrated their entire attitude of war, was a decisive surgical strike aimed directly at the command element of the enemy. Compact but hard-hitting force of Marines, up to several companies strong, would compose the initial and ideally total thrust of the effort. This battle philosophy was referred to as the spear tip. Their defeat in exile was a crushing blow to the ego of the Legion, and they broke down and fragmented easily without a purpose or powerful leader as the point of their spear. The Legion suffered significantly until Abaddon stepped in, said, "That's it, we're doing this," and the Legion has since regained a sense of discipline and purpose. Horus's favorite doctrine of tearing the throat out of the enemy by eliminating their high command in a swift strike remains a well-used tactic, and in fact, as you now know, and as you look back at the heresy, the idea of dropping the void shield or the energy shield to lure the Emperor into a fight is very much knocking out the command element of an army, the same way that he knocked out Sanguinius, and it's very consistent. Even the heresy in the Siege of Terra was very consistent with the, overall tactic of the Black Legion. Luna Wolves, Sons of Horus, Black Wolves, Luna Wolves, Ninja Gaiden.
The Luna Space.
Muhammad Jihad. The Luna Space Sons of Horus, Wolf Clan Mark III, Turbo Deluxe. This brings us, of course, to the end of our content. We're going to be covering the Night Lords, also known as Chaos Batman.
They are
the Night. We want to leave you with our thought of the day, which, of course, is that inspiration grows from the barrel of a gun. I'm Katsu, this is Gigabyte, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona, or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.